Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. And that is HR Educational Radio. You know, I got to tell you, we haven't had this guest back because we haven't had this guest back. I would love to have a better reason than that. But Todd Churches, and of course, is the CEO and co-founder of Big Blue Gumball. The name alone should have allowed me to get him back here sooner than this. But Todd hasn't been on since 2014. We brought him back today because he's got a great new book. That's right, a great new book, which we're going to talk about today. The book is titled Visual Leadership, Leveraging the Power of Visual Thinking in Leadership and in Life. Todd, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, David. Great to talk to you again. 6 years, it's been a long time. And at the time, I said I hadn't been up to Maine ever, and I still haven't. So it's like, that's how busy I've been. I haven't even had a chance to take that trip. But it's on my bucket list, so one of these days.
Well, that's fine. And I got to tell you, maybe that's why we haven't had you on back yet. You haven't come to Maine.
See,
you
know. Yeah, maybe next time we could do it live in person.
Well, you know, we'd love that. We'll get you in the studio. We'd have a great time doing it. That's all.
Right,
that's
all. Well, let's not wait 6 more years.
Though. You got it. You got a deal. All right. Okay. So obviously, you're still CEO, co-founder of the Big Blue Gumball, an innovative New York City-based consulting firm specializing in leadership development, management training, and executive coaching. Todd, tell me what's new. What's going on? I know you got the new book, but what's going on in your life? What's going on in the business?
A lot of things. I mean, we're all dealing with the COVID situation, right? I'm based here in New York City, so I'm right. We actually escaped to Fairfield, Connecticut a few weeks ago, so we're hunkering down out here. But yeah, crazy times all over. It's really impacted everyone's business. My book is launching May 12th. I had all these book signing events and speaking engagements and keynotes lined up, and they all had to be put on hold till who knows when. So doing a lot of things online, spending my life suffering from what I'm calling Zoom mania, the insanity caused by too many back-to-back Zoom calls. So I'm trying to recover from that, but I have the weekend to be Zoom-free.
You know, it is funny. We were talking about this with other colleagues, and, you know, we haven't had – we crave, of course, especially us extroverts, crave seeing and talking to people. But now we need to put a lot of eye drops in our eyes for all the glazing we're getting looking at a video screen that's constantly on and constantly moving. So there is a different life in Zoom. Zoom is a little bit different than actually being there, but it's better than nothing at all.
Yeah, that is true. And I'm an extreme introvert, so for me – in some ways, it's not that different than my formal life because I spend a lot of time writing, blogging, designing programs, and then forcing myself out of the door to meet with clients. And I teach at NYU in Columbia. I do keynotes. I do public speaking. So for me, for an introvert, it's a different way of looking at the world. And what's interesting is I had to start teaching my NYU class on Zoom. Literally, I had 24 hours notice when they canceled all live classes. So I had to learn the Zoom technology. One of the things I found that was kind of interesting, and this relates to visual thinking in a way, being on Zoom kind of levels the playing field. Everyone has that same 1-inch by 2-inch box. So with 12 students, and you can't, there's no hiding, right? There's no sitting in the back row or hiding behind someone taller in front of you. We're all up there on the screen. So that's a visual way of thinking about, you know, it's the camera's right on you. So how you adapt to that and respond to that is kind of interesting.
Well, no, your company tagline is, of course, we make training entertaining. How do you do that when you're doing it through Zoom? I think that's a great question to ask.
That is an amazing question. That's the biggest challenge. In addition to teaching at NYU, I also do faculty training, faculty development. So I train other faculty members in how to make your courses more experiential. And I did that in person, but now we have to translate that into online. Some professors teach, you know, tell their students you could keep your cameras off, keep your mics off. But that's just 3 hours of lecturing. If you're going to do that, you might as well just, you know, videotape yourself and let your students watch it at their convenience, right? I say cameras on, lights on, mics on, and let's make it a conversation. You need to use the technology, breakout rooms, whiteboard, chat. there's ways of doing it, using visuals, of course, using your sharing your PowerPoint slides and making them visual, not bullet point based. But I could talk for a long time on that. But yeah, it really does. You have to leverage visual thinking and experiential learning techniques to really engage people. Otherwise, you just put them to sleep. There's a TED Talk talks about visual, auditory, read, write, and kinesthetic learning. That's called VARK. It says if you don't do kinesthetic learning, which is about movement, then it's anesthetic, which puts people to sleep. So the flip side of kinesthetic is anesthetic. So that always resonated with me.
Well, no, that makes sense. And, of course, tone of inflection is everything, right? Keeping people going and moving in different tones and doing things. And I agree, keeping things moving on the screen is critical if you're going to keep people engaged.
Exactly.
So, you know, as your background, obviously, is in the entertainment industry for 10 years, and you develop shows and project managing. You must be thinking to yourself, boy, what a difference the world is today from what you've been doing for your whole life.
Yeah, definitely. I actually started out my career, and this is how ancient I am, at Ogilvy & Mather Advertising in 1985 when there were only three TV networks and cable had just been born. So I used to buy network TV time. That was my very first job out of college, placing TV ads in commercials. So think about that. We used to have ABC, CBS, and NBC, and now there's how many thousands of channels plus Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, et cetera. So the world has changed, and now with COVID, theme parks have shut down. People are more online than ever. So, yeah, I mean, everything's changed. And really think about, when we think about BC, you know, it meant something else. Now it's before COVID, right? So it's like there's the before COVID world, the COVID world we're living in right now, and then we're all trying to figure out what the post-COVID world is going to look like and when that's going to happen. The new normal, right?
The new normal, whatever that may be. You're exactly right. And so when you thought of this visual leadership book, knowing that it, of course, was going to come out in the middle of a pandemic, I'm sure you absolutely...
You knew right away
that that was going to be exactly what was going to be happening. And you said, this is the perfect book to put out in it. Tell us a little bit about, you know, why you wrote the book. Tell us a little bit about the thought process behind it, and then we'll certainly get into more of the detail on it.
Sure. Well, it's actually based in my background. As I mentioned, I started out in advertising, and then I worked in the TV industry. I worked for my millennial students don't know who he is, but I worked for Michael Nesmith of the Monkees, which us baby boomers grew up with. So I worked for him for his TV production company for a while, a video production company. Then I worked for Aaron Spelling. Then I was in comedy at Disney, drama at CBS. So those were my years in the TV industry, developing TV shows. And then I got into the project management business as a theme park project manager. I managed a few locally, but then I also did one in China, which I talk about in my TED Talk. I just did my first TEDx talk last June on called The Power of Visual Thinking. I talk a little bit about that. But basically, all my years in the entertainment and media industry, and before that, I was an undergrad major in Shakespeare and poetry, it's all about storytelling. It's all about character. It's all about character arc, right? We all go through a beginning, middle, and end in our lives, right? Our career paths are not, I would say they're not a career path, and this relates to the HR world. There's no path. It's a roller coaster. There's ups and downs, twists and turns. Sometimes you slide backwards, right? So I think the roller coaster is more of a relevant metaphor or analogy than a career path is. And now it's more curvy than ever and more unknown than ever. So basically my years in the entertainment media and my background in English literature has formed my mindset in terms of looking at the business world through the lens of entertainment and media. For example, with my classes and workshops, it's highly interactive, experiential. The students are interactive characters in this play we're putting on. And I always say the experience starts long before the student enters the classroom, just like when you go to Disneyland. You may go there for a three-minute ride, but the experience starts as soon as you drive through that gateway that says the happiest place on earth, right? So everything's an experience. So that's the job, is to create a visual experience that we're all living in. So that's just part of the mindset of what visual thinking is all about, as applied to the business world and specifically management and leadership, which is my area of focus.
So, you know, when you're thinking about visuals, and I 100% agree that, you know, that visual component, everything is an experience. What do you recommend HR professionals when they're thinking about, you know, a visual experience or a visual leader? How can they take a look at that title and say, how does that relate to me?
Yeah, that's a great question. in this day and age, everyone has shorter attention spans. We're overloaded with information. So in the past, an HR department might have put out a 300-page employee handbook or manual, right, or job training. Here's how to do this job. We don't have time for that. How could you translate those, pictures worth 1,000 words is a common metaphor, common saying for a reason. How could you turn those 1,000 words into a picture, a flow chart, a diagram, a process diagram? An org chart is a perfect example, right? You can have a whole text list of who everyone is and just list them by name, but when you put it into an org chart, you visually, in a snapshot, in the blink of an eye, you could see who reports to whom, how many direct reports you have. So right there, that's a classic example of HR using visuals. We do it already, but this makes people more aware of it. It's like, oh, yeah, we are doing that already. How can we do it more, and how can we do it better? And now we have to do it electronically, right? So not just on paper, but how can we do this in a way that people could pull up that slide on their screen, et cetera.
We're talking with Todd Churches. He's the CEO and co-founder of Big Blue Gumball, an innovative New York City-based consulting firm specializing in leadership development, management training, and executive coaching. You're listening to, of course, the HR Power Hour, HR Educational Radio. I'm your host, David Shulo. Todd, as I think about the book that you put together, you talk about in here visual models.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me a little bit about a visual model that would apply today, especially in these challenging times, especially when you're focused on business or leadership.
Sure. What's interesting, I actually was just invited to do my second TEDx talk. It was supposed to be next month, but postponed to the fall, and it was actually called The Magic of Mental Models. So my first one was The Power of Visual Thinking in general, but this one was specifically about mental models, which is what you're asking me about. So think about all the models that we have. A model is a visual representation of something, right? So a model could be Maslow's hierarchy of needs is a model, right? If I just say it, you could visualize it in your mind's eye. SWOT, a SWOT analysis, or any four-box matrix is a visual model. Simon Sinek's golden circle is a visual model. So we use them all the time, but also just in real life. A diagram, you could build a model of something in your mind before you build it physically. And one of the most common mental models and metaphors out there right now is flattening the curve, right? We hear it all the time. They're taking a really complex idea, but by putting it in this visual graph, basically, where the first curve is really high and basically exhausts the whole system. Well, if we flatten the curve, if we social distance and we can slow things down, we won't overload the healthcare system. So just that mantra of flattening the curve, if we have that picture in our mind's eye, that's a great example of a mental model that will help to frame our behaviors and the decisions we make.
Well, it's an interesting piece of the equation that people do think visually. There's no question about it. In the book, you talk a little bit about putting your cap on. Describe mm-hmm. that to me. What does that exactly mean?
Sure. CAP is an acronym that stands for confidence, assertiveness, and presence. So when I teach courses in executive presence, I always get people to think about score themselves on a scale of 0 to 10 or 1 to 10 in their confidence, their assertiveness, and their presence. Now, a lot of overconfident people will say, oh, I'm a 10 in all those areas. But 10 is not good. If you're too confident, you're overconfident. If you're too assertive, you're aggressive or obnoxious. If you have too much presence, you might be, it's all about you and it's not all about other people. So it's almost a trick. We want to have enough, but not too much, because too much of a good thing actually works against us. So 7 or 8 in those areas, as appropriate, is more meaningful. But so as a real-life example, one of my clients brought me in at a group. They were in a meeting. The CEO asked his group of finance people a question. No one responded. So he disbanded the meeting, and then after the meeting, about 6 of the 10 people emailed him the response. So he said, why didn't you just say so in the meeting 10 minutes ago? And he realized that none of them felt confident, assertive enough, or had felt their presence was worthy of speaking out in this meeting. So they brought me in to do this training to help boost. So here are these brilliant people, all mathematical financial minds, but none of them had the confidence to speak up in a meeting. And how often does that happen? So that's what the cap is about. Putting your cap on is about being more aware of, having influence and being able to speak up and speak out in meetings and in other situations.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing,
You know, it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsinME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsinME.com. That's JobsinME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay long sleeve tees are just $29.99 each when you buy two or more.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAKorea.com and Verrill-Law.com. Today, our guest is Todd Churches, and of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour, Educational HR Radio. He is the CEO and co-founder of Big Blue Gumball and author of the new book, Visual Leadership, that's V-I-S-U-A-L-E-A-D-E-R-S-H-I-P, one word, leveraging the power of visual thinking in leadership and in life. Talk to us, Todd, about one important aspect, which is, where'd you get this idea and concept?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, a lot of times people used to think you're either a visual thinker, an auditory thinker, or you're a kinesthetic learner or thinker, but it really isn't. Research and science has shown that we all have all four components, and brain studies has shown, and I'm not going to get into whole brain science because it's beyond my area of expertise, but our brain has more neurons and things focused on the visual component, so we take in information through our eyes, and what's interesting, I do an experiment around this. Where I have people, I say, hold your hand up in the air, point your index finger, and bring it down, and as quick as you can, touch your cheek. And people, while I point to my chin. So what people do, if you hear the word cheek and you see me touching my chin, you're going to put your hand on your chin because your eyes overrule your ears. So visual thinking is so dominant, and it's basically rooted in fight, flight, or freeze, right? If you're out in the woods and you see something, you're going to respond to it. So the visual really dominates our thinking, and it's the whole right brain, left brain, metaphorically kind of thing. So, the world is visual and auditory, but it's really, one of my mantras is, I see what you're saying. And I think that's one of our biggest challenges in the world, both in the business world and in real life. How do you get people to see what you're saying? How do you get an idea from your mind's eye, and that's from Shakespeare's Hamlet, into someone else's head, and capture their hearts and minds by getting your ideas across. And we're all trying to do that, but I think that's the idea behind visual thinking, is how do you plant that image from your head into someone else's so they could say, I see what you're saying. And on radio, we're on radio right now, right? This is not, I can't hold something up and show it to you, so I need to use visual language to help communicate to you and to your listeners what I'm talking about.
You're absolutely right. It's one of the challenges of radio is the fact that you have to constantly be speaking in a way so that people will stay engaged because they're not watching anything. They may watch the dial, but they're not watching anything. They're just seeing, they're just listening to it, whether they're driving down the road or doing it. You know, in the book and in your concept, you talk about how you break up visual leadership into an approach of four segments. Let's go through them a little bit here. I'll say the first one is visual imagery and drawing. The second is mental models and frameworks. Three, metaphor and analogy. And then four, visual storytelling and humor. I'd like to take a little bit of a breakdown in each one. So tell me a little bit about the visual imagery and drawing.
Sure. Like, we've all gone to presentations where the speaker just spoke, and then we've seen other ones that had really good PowerPoint visuals, right? So if someone shows you a PowerPoint slide, if someone draws something on a flip chart, you're going to capture their attention. And I break it down, just to take a step backwards, into three areas. I say visuals increase your attention, comprehension, and retention, right? If you use visuals or visual language or visual imagery, you're going to capture people's attention. They're going to focus on what you're showing them. Comprehension, by seeing it with your eyes, you increase understanding, and also research has shown that it increases recall and memory. That's the retention piece. So right there, you want people to focus on what you're saying, understand what you're saying, and remember what you're saying. Visuals do that, right? So if I use a picture, an image, a road sign, right? It's a stop sign. Even before you see the word stop, the octagonal shape and that red sign tells you to stop. Right? One of the techniques I use when I get feedback in my coaching is stop, start, continue. So if you picture a traffic light with a red light, a yellow light, and a green light, red is what are some things that you're doing that are counterproductive that you need to stop doing, yellow, what are some things that are working that you should continue doing, and green, what are some new things that you want to start doing. So right there, I created a visual image. We've all seen the traffic light. You now have that image in your head. So instead of just saying, I need you to stop, start, and continue doing this, when you visualize that traffic light, it just takes it to a whole other level. And especially if you have people write it out in the different color markers, that it really solidifies it, because then you're using color coding to encode that information in your brain. So that's just one example of that.
So we've talked about visual imagery and drawing. How about the second one, mental models and frameworks?
Yeah, we touched on that a little bit, like the flatten the curve model. But also think about all the models that we're familiar with from, situational leadership, for example, is a model or a framework, right? If you're playing football and you draw X's and O's on a chalkboard and draw arrows, people know from that drawing, it becomes a mental model or a framework. You know what to do and where to go just based on those symbols. So one of the things I would talk about, if you think about it, cave drawings were symbols. Egyptian hieroglyphics were symbols. Emojis that we use right now in our emails and emoticons, those are symbols, right? So we've been communicating with symbols and visual imagery all the way back to caveman times, right? So it's all about how do we use visual imagery and create models and frameworks so you could picture it in your mind's eye. And one of the things I do when I'm teaching and coaching, I have people draw things out. Like, for example, if I'm teaching a model, let's say Maslow's hierarchy of needs, I'll actually have them take out a pen and pad, and my students in class were so used to their laptops and phones that a lot of times they don't even have a pen and pad with them, but that's a requirement in my course. And I'll actually have them draw out the five-level pyramid and actually fill in the blanks, because the kinesthetic act of writing and drawing will solidify it in your head as opposed to just looking at something on a slide.
We're talking with Todd Churches. He's the CEO and co-founder of Big Blue Gumball, an innovative New York City-based consulting firm that specializes in leadership development, management training, and executive coaching. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and I'm your host, David Chulo. That's Educational HR Radio. You know, I got to tell you, it's one of the things that I've learned a lot about is metaphor and analogy. That's your third one. And I use analogies all the time, sometimes to the detriment of people that I talk to. They go, another analogy, really? So tell us a little bit about your thoughts in that area.
Yeah, sure. I actually guest spoke on someone else's webinar the other day. She was doing a metaphor. Aisha Bercell wrote, I want to give her a plug for her amazing book called Design the Life You Love. She's a friend of mine based here in New York. She's a Herman Miller designer who now uses her design techniques to help people design their work and design their life. She was talking about how, using the current COVID situation, we're like a caterpillar before, now we're in this cocoon, and how are we going to come out on the other end as a butterfly, right? What do you need to do to transform yourself and transform your life now during these difficult times where we're all hunkering down at home, so that when the window opens, we could fly out and color our world as a butterfly? Right there, that's a metaphor and analogy that demonstrates three stages of transformation visually. And you could actually, so picture yourself as that butterfly strapping on those wings. Where do you see yourself flying to when this is all over, right? So that's one example. Baseball, I'm a huge baseball fan, Yankees and Mets fan, based here in New York. We use so many baseball analogies, but a lot of my students are international students from China. So a 25-year-old female from China may not, you know, get a metaphor from baseball as much as, say, a nature metaphor that's more universal. So metaphors help to simplify the complex, make the unfamiliar familiar, and the intangible tangible, and the invisible visible. But if we don't use a relevant metaphor that our audience can relate to, then we actually do the opposite. We create confusion instead of understanding.
Of course, we're talking with Todd Churches. His book, Visual Leadership, Leveraging the Power of Visual Thinking in Leadership and in Life, comes out on May 12th. That's great. We'll make sure that we have that up online so that people can know where to go to get that. You know, the fourth area you talk about is visual storytelling and humor. And I got to tell you, a little humor could really be effective right now.
Yeah, sure. That's why so many stories begin with, you wouldn't believe what happened to me today, or a funny thing happened to me on the way to the forum, right? Stories resonate with people. So when I do my management leadership training, a manager can say to an employee, never do this, and here's why. Or a manager can say, let me tell you about what happened to me when I did this, right? That story of, let me tell you about the worst boss I've ever had, the worst team I've ever been on, the best boss or the best team, right? I use a lot of storytelling in my class, and it basically helps people to connect. It humanizes you as a manager when you tell stories. They're memorable, they're emotional, there's a hook to stories. And again, and the humor. People like to laugh, people like to have fun. And even serious situations, what's interesting is all like the humor that people use to just get through a difficult situation like we're all getting through right now. I mean, it's so serious, it's so heartbreaking, but if we don't try to find some humor and some relief, it's really hard to function. So we really need to find the humor in the situation. And one of my stories that I always tell, it's in my book, years ago, working for a TV network out in L.A., I won't mention which one, but I won't even mention which one, because who knows, it could be a sponsor, I don't want to alienate anyone. I was sitting at my desk typing a memo, my boss's door flew open, and I felt something whip by my head, and my boss had thrown a box of pens at my head. And it was because she wanted the medium point, and I had ordered the fine point. So there might have been another way for her to communicate that to me, that Todd, you ordered the wrong pens or whatever. But her way of dealing with it was to throw it at my head. So I always say that sounds like a scene out of a movie, but it was a movie of my life because I had dealt with this horrible psycho boss for almost a year. So right there, that story, it's like, let's see, is there any other way of giving that feedback that, hey, you did something wrong other than physically assaulting someone? My students love that story because they can just picture me sitting there having a box.
Without questions, I can do that in terms of that area. You know, one of the things you mentioned in your book when it talks about visual stories is ego-free leadership. And I think that is something that sometimes gets in the way of good leaders, is that ego. Talk to us a little bit about that visual story.
Sure. I have two quick stories. One is I worked for a company called Liquidnet, a financial services company in New York, and I'm not a financial guy, so when I took that job, I'm like, I don't know if this is the right fit. It ended up being the best job I've ever had. The culture was just like, I always called them a Wall Street company with a dot-com culture. Anyway, the CEO was in one of my training sessions, and one of the things that he did, he went through every training as a participant that every other manager went through. So right there, he basically flattened the hierarchy. One time he sat there, he's like, I'm hungry, I need a snack, during one of my workshops, and I, in a lot of other companies, someone else would run out and get something for the CEO. He got up, and not only did he get himself a snack, but he came back with a basket of cookies and chips and went around table to table saying, who wants something? Like, that to me was so indicative of servant leadership, literally servant leadership. Can I serve you some snacks, right? That was a great example of ego-free leadership that I experienced firsthand.
And do you see a lot of that in the organizations, or do you still see that as being a problem today in some of the places that you talk to?
Yeah, I mean, so often people are about prestige, about getting the corner office. As more people work from home, one of the things we haven't talked about yet is the shift to remote workplaces. That levels the playing field, right? When you're home in Zoom, there's no corner office, there's no boardroom, there's no executive bathroom key, right? We're all just trying to get our work done. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see if this crisis, when we come out the other side, if it does kind of level the playing field in some ways and humanizes people. So if someone says, I need to work from home today, a company that didn't have a work from home policy may be more flexible and willing to do that because they've shown that it works.
You know, it's interesting you say that it's going to change a lot. We were I was talking to a colleague of mine who has young children, and they were talking about the fact that some of the schools were saying this could end snow days. Because now if it's a snow day, we're just going to give you an assignment for that day or two. We can zoom it in or out or do however we use for our technology, and there's not even going to be snow days anymore. Now, as a child, I enjoyed snow days.
Who didn't love a snow day?
So I don't know. I'll just go with that.
We grew up in the Northeast, right? I guess people in the West Coast or South may not even know what a snow day is. I'm not really sure.
Well, it's true. But they have hurricane days, tornado days, earthquake days.
I had many earthquake days when I lived out in L.A. for 10 years.
And that's a different world, right? It's just a different world. Or heat days. I remember a colleague of mine living in Florida said they have heat days where it's just so hot and you can't go out. So
Well, I once had someone say, I'm taking a snow day today in the middle of the summer. And in that way, they were using it as a metaphor, meaning I'm just going to stay at home and just kind of chill. Sometimes it's a literal snow day, and sometimes you may just use that as an expression.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. We're talking with Todd Churches today, CEO and co-founder of Big Blue Gumball, and we will be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsandme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobsandme to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Best paints for the job site are at the Home Depot, specifically new Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer. It starts at only $23.98 a gallon. It's specially formulated to spray easier and cover walls faster, a lot faster. So you're done and on to the next job faster. Better paint means better jobs. New Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer starting at just $23.98 a gallon. You'll only find it in one place, the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Life's never perfect, but as realtors, we know living it in the perfect place can make a big difference.
Imagine
hiding from your screeching children in that spacious walk-in closet. Watching the neighbor's dog poop on the freshly sodded grass you negotiated during closing. Dropping your cell phone in the toilet of the spa-like five-piece bathroom again. So get the perfect place to house all of life's imperfections. Get Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Stephen Chulo, and you're listening to Educational HR Radio on the HR Power Hour. Today, our guest is Todd Churches. He is the CEO and co-founder of Big Blue Gumball. You know I asked this question back in 2014, Todd. I know I did because I'm pretty sure that I know the answer. But where did you get the name Big Blue Gumball?
It is. We were just talking about metaphors. It's a metaphor. To us, the world is like a big blue gumball. So however you want to take it or define it, it's up to you. But that's the name of our company. So we used to actually give out blue gumballs in our workshops, but it turned everyone's teeth and tongues blue, and we realized that's not, you can have a lawsuit on your hands from someone who just had their teeth whitened. So we switched to those blue stress squishy balls as a giveaway instead.
Well, I understand. Now, of course, you know if you whiten your teeth too much, they turn blue anyway, so we'll go with that. And of course, visual leadership, leveraging the power of visual thinking in leadership and in life, is his new book coming out on May 12th. Hey, you know, Todd, it's interesting as I think about this topic and I think about HR professionals that we're speaking to and business leaders. You know, HR professionals sometimes have to communicate really tough and integral or detailed things to employees. And I think about certainly during these challenging times, there is no question that there are a lot of things changing and a lot of things that impact people's lives emotionally or impact people in a way that who knew any of this would have happened. How do you take the concept that we have of this visual process and turn it into serious items that you have to talk to people about?
Yeah, I mean, you could take each one. It's actually like a checklist. So you could say, you know, visual imagery and drawing, right? Can I get up, say I'm explaining something at an employee orientation or explaining a new policy, you can literally get up at a whiteboard or a flip chart and draw it out so people can follow along with you. Or you could use an image that captures where you are in the process, right, or what's going on. What would be a good metaphor, for example, that you could use? Let's say someone comes up with a new idea. You could say, we're planting the seed for this idea. It's going to grow, and then it's going to bear fruit. And then there's an old Chinese expression, sometimes you have to go out on a limb because that's where the fruit is, right? So just using that visual language helps to, basically get an image out of your head into someone else's. Again, policy manuals. Can you simplify something into a document? It's less words and more visuals, more images to help guide people along, more storytelling, trying to inject some humor into even serious situations. Like one example that I talked to about with an HR person the other day, we all live on LinkedIn these days, right? Profiles with faces are more likely to get people to link in with you than those without, right? What is it about? If everything, all else being the same, what is it about having a face there? It humanizes the person. It removes the anonymity, right? A blog post with an image is read like 10 times more than those with text alone. Use of video, that's a big thing that HR people can do. Instead of sending out, and I think that Marriott, the video of the Marriott CEO talking about COVID, their COVID policy went out. Can you use a video that you could send out to your people instead of sending out a 20-page memo, right? Again, that humanizes you. It's storytelling. It's connection. Those are just some things that HR people could think about. Can we leverage, you know, any of these technologies, again, to humanize what we're doing? Because, again, one of the things we always talk about, I teach in the Human Capital Management graduate program at NYU, how can we put the human back in human resources, right? Especially as we talk about the future of work and people worried about the robots taking over, right? Where does that leave me as a person?
You just said you did a TED Talks on the power of visual thinking, obviously as a prelude to this type book you're putting out. What was it like to do your first TED Talk?
It was a great experience, amazing community. I did it here in New York City. It's TEDx Chelsea Park. And it was the hardest thing. I think picture the iceberg analogy, which is useful for all kinds of, especially in the HR field, but with all the things I know, all the things in my book, they literally, first I thought I was going to have 18 minutes, and then they said 12, and they said, no, we're going to have 11 speakers, and each person only has 8. So you have 8 minutes to give the talk of your life. What do you leave out? So that was the single hardest thing, to kind of distill everything down to a tight 8 minutes. So I'm very happy with how it came out, despite the fact that there was a technical glitch where I had sent them my full PowerPoint and then just the 10 highlight slides that were going to go in the video, and they accidentally put up the 10 highlight slides. So I actually had to do my whole TED Talk not knowing. Luckily, they were in the right sequence, but with only 10 of my around 30 PowerPoint slides that I was supposed to use. So half my brain was presenting, and the other half was editing, coaching, and trying to keep myself from flipping out.
Well, you know, part of that is a good experience for you, right? Resilience. Resilience is the word we would
look. Yes, that was definitely I was almost in tears when I got off the stage, but no one noticed except for my wife, who had rehearsed with me. Everyone was like, wow, that was amazing. So, yeah, that was the thing I took away most from it, that I was able to, in the moment, basically get through what was really a difficult situation.
Well, now, you and I have talked in the past about the fact that you had a Dale Carnegie experience, and obviously as everybody know I used to own the Dale Carnegie franchise, and I do recall taking a high-impact presentation course in which halfway through it I had done similar to you. I was in the midst of the whole thing and realized I had completely messed up everything in my But, of course, I finished, and when I was done, the people in the audience said that was absolutely fantastic, and I'm thinking to myself, that was the absolute worst thing I've ever done in my life. Yeah. And it was that moment of clicking, of reminding you they don't know what's in your head. And probably that's a good thing.
Yeah. My wife's an actress. She's now a casting director, but when I first met her, she was a stage actress. And she would do an amazing performance, but she would kick herself afterwards because she blew that one line that no one else even noticed, right? So a lot of times we're so hard on ourselves, and people don't know what we messed up or left out. So we need to kind of cut ourselves some slack, especially now with what everyone's going through. You're on a Zoom call, and your cat jumps across your keyboard, or your kid walks into the room. It's like, I think we all need to be just more flexible now and have a sense of perspective and lighten up a little bit, right?
Well, I got to tell you,
each other.
That's right. I actually count on that happening sometimes. You know, sometimes I'll encourage.
More fun and lightens the mood.
That's exactly. Yeah. Sometimes I keep a treat on the desk just so my dog will jump up to get it and pop into the picture, because you know sometimes it breaks up and everybody goes, "Oh, he's so cute," or "She's so cute," and it's funny, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of dogs, I just one of the chapters of my book is called Yellow Ball Leadership. When I was growing up, my dog, I'd have a red ball, a blue ball, and a yellow ball, and I throw them, and I'm not going to give away her real name because it's some of my passwords, but so I'll call her Coco, not her real name for her anonymity. I throw all three balls, the red, the blue, and the yellow, and I'd say, "Coco, bring back the yellow ball," and she would bring it back, and people would be so amazed, but she always brought back the yellow ball. It didn't matter what I said. So I use that as an analogy of setting people up for success. Find out what people like and set them up for success, and that was one of the tricks I did when I was, you know, 12 years old, but it's a lesson that resonated with me years later, and that's a metaphor that I call yellow ball leadership. It's all about motivating people by giving them what they want and incentivizing them and then recognizing and rewarding them when they do it.
You know, it's interesting in your book, in part four, when you're talking about leading with visual stories, you have one that is number 44, how to regain your confidence and recapture your mojo after a setback. I think this is an appropriate time to maybe tell that story.
Yeah. Well, it was 2010. I had been working at my company, LiquidNet, for 3 years, and I loved it there. But the 2008 financial crisis finally hit my company at that point, and out of nowhere, I found out I was getting laid off. And my boss, who was actually, he was my colleague at Dale Carnegie. I haven't told my Dale Carnegie story yet, but he was my colleague at Dale Carnegie, did a training at this company, LiquidNet. They loved him so much, they hired him to create a corporate university. A year later, he hired me to run their leadership program. I love that job. I love the people. That's where that boss was, the ego-free leadership, the guy who gave out all the chips and snacks. I got laid off from there with no notice. So it was 10 o'clock in the morning. I was like, what do? You basically are given a pink slip, not a literal one, but a metaphorical one. And I didn't know what to do. So I was in Midtown Manhattan, and I didn't even know how to call my wife to tell her. So I just walked up Broadway all the way, like, from 30-something street to 80, so 50 blocks. I ended up at the Museum of Natural History, if anyone's ever been here to New York. And I just wandered around among the dinosaurs and among the planetarium, and it kind of put things in perspective. So, like, it gave me, like, this big picture historical perspective of, you know what, the dinosaurs went extinct, I'm not going to, and it just kind of took me out of the reality. So I think that we need that right now. It's like, realize what's good, realize what's positive. We're all struggling financially, economically. I've lost like 80% of my business already this year. Hopefully I'll get some of it back in the second half. But we need to find some way to get our confidence back, our mojo back, and find the positives and say, you know what, going back to that caterpillar butterfly analogy, what can I do now that will increase my likelihood of being that butterfly when things finally open up?
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, You know, it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
It's 3 p.m., and you just ran out of ink. You have a report due end of day, which is 2 hours from now. You can't push the deadline because end of day means end of today, not end of tomorrow day. What now? Go to your local Staples store. Staples now has an even bigger selection of HP ink and toner. In store, in stock, and at low prices every day. So you can get your ink fast for less. End of story.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. You know what? This is educational HR radio at its best. And one of the guests today is Todd Churches. He is the CEO and co-founder of Big Blue Gumball. I got to tell you, Todd, it's been great talking with you today and, of course, talking about your new book, which is Visual Leadership, Leveraging the Power of Visual Thinking in Leadership and in Life. And I think, you know, this is so relevant today, but there may be people out there who say, you know what, you know, I'm not a visual person. How did this affect me?
Yeah, I mean, we're all visual, and even if you think you're not, you know, one of the examples that just popped into my head, I was doing a workshop on visual storytelling, and one of the CEOs in the room said, I hate stories, I hate storytelling, I'm a terrible storyteller. And I said, why do you say that? And he went on to tell this amazing story about why he's a bad storyteller. And everyone looked at each other like, and I was like, do I have to say it or do you? And it's like, that was an amazing story. So a lot of times we doubt ourselves or we say I'm not. Same thing with drawing, right? People say, oh, I'm not visual, I can't draw. Anyone could draw a stick figure, and I use an exercise to demonstrate how people can draw. But if you ask a group of five-year-olds how many of you can draw, how many raise their hands? All of them. You ask a group of business professionals, and very few of them. So have we lost our ability to draw from age five or just our confidence? And I think it's just being more aware. If you're aware that you already are a visual thinker and you're using it, you're more likely to do it. And I think that's the main thing about the book. It makes us aware of what it is, the fact that we all could do it, and then these are some of my stories. And, you know, think of your own stories, your own metaphors that you use. And once you're more aware, you'll start doing it more often and more effectively.
So you said you have a story that you want to tell us about how you all started. And, you know, because you told me off the air that you are an extreme introvert. So tell me a little bit about how you became this person that talks about, you know, presenting and visual presentations and all that, because that just would seem to not be the initial you.
If you've ever heard the term imposter syndrome, I suffer from that every single day. When I get up in front of an audience doing a keynote or in front of my class, I'm like, what am I doing up here? I used to be the person behind the scenes, back of the room. In fact, in my class, I have my students stand up, and we do an exercise where everyone has to speak, and I say to them, you have all spoken more than I spoke in all my years of junior high school, and graduate school, because I never once spoke in a class. And I'm not exaggerating. I never, except if I was called on a couple of times, but I never actually got up and talked for any length of time. I don't know how I got through all of school doing that, especially since I was a communications major for my master's degree. So there's something wrong there. You can get your master's in communication without ever once speaking in a class. So, but basically, I'm always an extreme bookworm. And next Thursday, is Shakespeare's birthday, April 23rd. And I belong to the Shakespeare Club now. And I had read the complete works of Shakespeare by the time I was 18. I started with Romeo and Juliet and Julius Caesar and Hamlet, and I went straight through and I read the entire Riverside Shakespeare. So just showed you how little social life I had back then, other than playing basketball and stuff. But basically, I was always a very shy, extreme introvert, And after 9/11, I was out of work, kind of down, and I got a mailer to take a Dale Carnegie free evening workshop, and I signed up for the course, and I went, and after the first half of the first session, I said, this is not for me, and I almost left. So it's actually one of those crucible moments of, do I leave or do I go back in? And I went back in, and it literally changed my life. I mean, it boosted my confidence, my speaking skills, and then I became a class coach, then I became a Dale Carnegie trainer, specializing in the LTM, leadership training for managers, and that launched my whole speaking career. So without that and without the mentorship of this guy, Joe Armentano, one of my now best friends and bosses and mentors, one of the people I dedicate my book to in the acknowledgments, he literally changed my life. And without him, I wouldn't have done my TED Talk. I wouldn't have gotten my job at LiquidNet, and I definitely wouldn't be teaching at NYU or Columbia or doing any of the things I'm doing right now. So in some ways, that really did set my life down a whole other path that I didn't even think was possible for me.
You know, we've been talking today with Todd Churches. He's the CEO and co-founder of Big Blue Gumball. Of course, his new book, Visual Leadership, Leveraging the Power of Visual Thinking in Leadership and in Life, comes out on May 12th. We encourage you to get it. We encourage you to go find this book because it's going to be out there. How can we do that? Will it be at Amazon?
Yes, it's on Amazon right now for pre-sale. And just to let you know, visual leadership, it's my own patented word. It took 2 years of rejection, but the patent office finally has a little R next to it in the trademark registration. So it's actually spelled with a single L, so visual leadership as one word with a single capital L in the middle. And it's kind of like my branded approach. And it's basically where, if you picture a Venn, here's visual thinking, picture a Venn diagram with visual thinking and visual communication in one circle, management and leadership in the other, and visual leadership is where the two intersect.
Todd, it's been great having you back on the show. I truly appreciate you coming back on, and let's not wait 6 more years, okay, to make that happen.
I would love it. I'd love to come up there one of these days.
Anytime.
David, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back with the HR Tip of the Week. And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, I'm Liz Johnston from Verrill. You're probably familiar with the concept of a non-compete agreement. However, with states across the country enacting statutes restricting their use, do you know what other options are available to protect your organization? Non-compete agreements frequently include non-solicitation provisions, which can prevent an employee from soliciting customers and employees of their former employer, as well as non-disclosure provisions, which prevent disclosure of confidential or proprietary information of the former employer. However, these provisions can be developed into standalone agreements that can protect your company and may not necessarily be subject to the same restrictions, including salary or income requirements, that a non-compete agreement would be subject to. Of course, it's important to check a specific state's law to determine the permissible scope and other requirements of these agreements, including what consideration may be required. If you have questions about how these agreements could benefit your organization, please contact me or another member of Verrill's Employment and Labor Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.